to CL Talk, the leading podcast for the legal profession across Canada, brought to you by Canadian Lawyer Magazine. I'm Tim Wilbur, the managing editor of Canadian Lawyer Magazine. Today, I'm speaking with Amanda Fowler, a sports lawyer and corporate counsel at Aviva Canada. Amanda will also be appearing at Canadian Lawyer's upcoming Women in Law Summit in Toronto in April, where she will speak about strategies to empower women in law and how they can take charge of their own career path. Welcome, Amanda.
Thanks, Tim, for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
First off, can you tell me a bit about your role at Aviva Canada, as well as your sports law practice, and how you designed your career with both of these elements?
Sure. I think, in part, they both developed simultaneously, and they also developed without much intent, in the sense that I knew I wanted to have a sports law practice of some sort. And when I first started my career, I would work on some pro bono cases, and I would do it alongside my regular job. And so it was almost out of necessity that I had to balance both at the same time. And then over time, I developed this sport law practice. So now they exist in tandem. And so with respect to my role at Aviva, I started off in the litigation department. It's called Aviva Trial Lawyers. So I started off working there, and then I migrated into the corporate law department. And credit to Aviva, they've allowed me to have my sport practice for the entire time. And it's been really nice to be able to balance both of those and to have the support that I do get from them.
Great. And I want to ask you more about both of these things. But the topic at the conference you'll be speaking about, and something that I've attended the conference for several years now, that you know, one of the big themes is overcoming traditional barriers and biases in male-dominated fields. And I would imagine, well, I know in the legal field generally, it's many senior positions especially are male-dominated. And in sports law, I would imagine that would be the case as well. So can you tell me a bit about how you've overcome those barriers, either in both or in all of them, what you've done to do that?
I think the examples of perhaps gender bias that I've experienced aren't too common, at least as my practice has, or at least as, you know, as I've carried on in the law career, which is nice. But I did notice it really often at the beginning of my career. You know, I was subject to workplace harassment at the time, and I think it happened frequently enough that I never really thought much of it. I honestly thought it was just sort of part of the practice. So it didn't necessarily bother me too much because I think I normalized it, whether that was a good thing or not. But then as I moved on in my career, I noticed that happened less and less. But something that does happen on occasion now is I think I'm either perceived as too nice, or I'm told I'm too nice, or I'm told that I'm too aggressive if I'm choosing to take a hardline stance on something. And so getting those labels can be frustrating because I don't see that with my male counterparts. I feel like I'm never enough in one category or never enough in the other. But by and large, I should say that the law profession has been good to me in that sense. So I have been lucky.
So if you can tell me first about, I imagine with sports law, that's an area that people are interested when they hear about your career. So if you can tell me a bit about a precedent-setting decision in sports law that you've worked on.
Mm-hmm. At this point, I've got a couple. One that comes to mind as a recent one was I represented a Gymnastics Canada athlete in a safe sport matter, and it was against her coach, Elvira Saadi. And I think the reason that it considered precedent setting was because it's the first safe sport decision in Canada that provides a pretty serious sanction to a coach as a result of maltreatment in sport that's not sexual in nature. So I think that's pretty important. And I think it sets the standard now moving forward for the severity of sanctions that can be delivered for various forms of maltreatment that don't involve sexual assault, because I know that gets a lot of attention and that has maintained the standard for a permanent ban or, you know, a relatively serious sanction. up until this decision. So I think a lot of sport organizations have been now put on notice, and I think everyone is now paying attention. And I think this has caused people to reflect more on how their organization is operating and the people that they're hiring. So, you know, I was really proud of that decision, and it was a real pleasure representing that athlete.
And I know many women, when they talk about their careers who have been successful in the law, talk about the importance of mentors as well as sponsors. So can you tell me a bit about maybe a mentor in your career that's been important in your success?
Mm-hmm. I've been lucky. I've had a few. One that stands out is someone who's I've known since I was a law student, and I still consider them a mentor now, even though we are also colleagues. But I had a professor in law school named Dr. Amir Crown, who took a chance on me as a student and brought me into a sports law case. And at this time, I had no experience with it. He was just generous enough to want to pass along some knowledge and bring me on board and give me that exposure. And to get exposure to a sport law case or anything involved in sports is something really special, because those types of opportunities don't come around every day. So for him to be generous enough to do that was great. And then along the way, throughout our mentor-mentee relationship, he also taught me a lot. He taught me, you know, the importance of ethics. He taught me how to practice the right way, how to be respectful always. And he demonstrated that. He always demonstrates that in every single case and in every interaction. And so I consider him, you know, one of my prominent mentors and someone that I look up to and admire. And he's always available for advice too, which I find really helpful. So overall, I've been lucky again to have someone like that in my corner.
And self-advocacy, along with having mentors, self-advocacy is really important. So how would you say you've used that effectively in your career, or reflected back on maybe where you could have done that differently?
I think in a place where I did it well was when I made the transition from the litigation department at Aviva to the corporate department. So when someone looks at it on a resume or, you know, on LinkedIn, it doesn't look like much. It simply looks like I've made a transition, but that work that went into it was a lot. So I was given the opportunity at Aviva Trial Lawyers to get exposure into other areas of the business. And I used that opportunity to ask for exposure to the corporate legal department because I wanted to expand my skill set and I wanted to get a broader, you know, I just wanted to get more exposure to other areas of law. And you don't necessarily get that opportunity in a law firm. That happens. It's easier to have that done in-house. So I had asked for that. And then over the course of 2 years before I even moved over to the corporate legal department, I was building relationships there and I was doing piecemeal work and getting exposure. And I think that transition occurred only because of the advocacy component, that I advocated for myself and asked for that. And I asked for something, I made a request that was pretty bold. And I then made good on it by not squandering the opportunity once I got it. I maintained a relationship with the chief legal officer and I, you know, continued to do good work whenever I got that opportunity. So there's an example of one where I think I did something good. Off the top of my head, in terms of where advocacy could have been better, nothing comes to mind, but I think for me, when there is something that I really want, I will tend to advocate quite strongly for it. And I tend to pull away from opportunities when I realize that I'm not that interested. So the pullback, I think, is something that happens too.
And I understand, in addition to these two elements to your career, you also do teaching. So that's a lot. Two different legal practices, essentially, and teaching as well. How do you balance all those things? And what would advice would you give to other women in particular, balancing those things and their work-life balance in general?
Yeah, I agree with you. It is when people say it back to me, it does sound like a lot. I think the way I acknowledge that there are certainly busier times of the year than others. Everything happens from about February to April. So that is the busiest time. I think that's probably the busiest time of the year for me. The way I tend to balance it is I try my best to set priorities, and I set those priorities ahead of time. So it'll either be a week ahead or a month ahead, looking forward. And I try only to commit so much within a particular day or within a particular week. And then when that week is filled or that day is filled, I cap it off and I don't take on anything more. And I think for the most part, that has been working for me. But I will say that, you know, this is obviously a work in progress. It's something that I do struggle with on occasion. And I want to acknowledge that, because as much as I can be a high performer, every day doesn't look perfect. You know, I do have days of struggle, days where I feel like my quote unquote balance is out of whack. I think especially during busier times where there's something going on at work or in, you know, any of my work related things, I always want to make sure that I still have quality time with my family, which is really important to me. And I think adjustments have been made since having my son, because priorities have shifted. And as a result, my work commitments have shifted. And the way I approach work, I think, has also shifted. So I just want to put that out there that, you know, work-life balance isn't necessarily always 50-50. Actually, to be honest, it'll never be 50-50. But I think as long as overall you're feeling like you're getting fulfillment out of both sides of your life, then I think you're doing something right. And that's a gut check for each individual. I don't think I can necessarily impose on someone to do it a certain way, because for me it might work and for them it might work a little bit differently. So maybe the grace is something I should also extend to others and just offer that as advice.
Yeah, and it sounds like what you were saying about kind of seeing your next, the short term, and planning it out and then just capping it and saying no. And I know that's sometimes a difficult thing for younger lawyers, especially, to say no to things. So how do you sort of decide how to do that? And is there a better way to do it when you have reached that point where you just can't take on more?
Yeah, that's a good question, because when I was, so I'm an 8-year call now, but when I was first starting out, I wouldn't say no to things. And that's in part why I had this practice where I was working in house or working in a law firm and also doing a sport law practice on the side. I knew that building a sport practice was really important to me, and so I wouldn't say no to opportunities, especially in sport, because they don't come around very often. So to be honest with you, Tim, I took on a lot of work-related things earlier on in my career in order to develop that reputation and to get those opportunities. Now I think I'm in a different place in my career where I do feel like I already have this reputation now. I have built it. And so my priorities now are shifting now that I have a family. So in that sense, I think career was a heavy focus earlier on. Now I'm seeing more of a balance. I'm seeing my career evening out a little bit more, where I'm spending now more time with my family and with a few other, you know, doing more personal things. So yeah, I want to point that out, and I hope I answered your question there.
Yeah, for sure. And I know you teach as well. So can you tell me a bit about that? And then when you teach, what advice you give to younger lawyers? Because this is a big issue, obviously, with younger lawyers who are starting families, for them specifically, or early in their career, about what to say no to if they can, or how to decide what to prioritize.
Yeah. So I teach at Western. I teach a sports law course there. I also teach at the Sports Solution Clinic. So I supervise students who are working on legal, you know, have working on legal matters that are from athletes that come into the clinic. So I have two roles at Western. And when it comes to teaching students, when it comes to the clinic on the practical side, and actually in part at the in the course too, I try to incorporate a practical element. You know, I think in addition to teaching general negotiation skills and advocacy skills, the most important thing that I try to teach students is how to be a good lawyer, like a good person as a lawyer. And the other thing that I teach them is reputation is everything. So I remember my call to the bar ceremony. There was a judge who said, you know, you'll spend your whole career building it up, and it only takes one thing to bring it all down. And that was something that really resonated with me. And it's something that I've always carried forward in everything I do. Acting ethically is really, really important. I always want people to have an experience with me where they come out thinking that I was a good person. I may have been a tough negotiator or a really strong advocate, but also a good person and someone who was respectful to the process and to every person involved. And that, you know, the client felt like they had a good representative in me. And so those values are things that I pass on because I think if their first experience is one with me, then I feel like I'm giving back to the law community in some way. My articling experience was very much like that too. They taught me how to practice law the right way. And so it's nice now to feel like I get to pass that on as well.
And with your role at Aviva, it would be different than your sports law practice. I don't know if it's if you could say it was less specialized and more general, because a lot of in-house counsel positions are more generalist. Can you tell me a bit about how you sort of keep up on the law in your that kind of that job as well as in the sports law area?
The department at Aviva, we have quite a few lawyers in the corporate department, and I think we do a really good job, you know, sharing information with each other. There's a few specialists in our department. We go to CLEs often together, and so I think that's a great way to get up to date on, you know, new legal concepts or, you know, new cases and things like that. The Women in Law Summit is also a great place, I think, to learn how to evolve not only as you practice but also your teams and your team culture. So we do a lot of those types of exercises, and then we bring it into our practice. So for example, I was looking at a contract involving an influencer recently, and just the other week I went to a CPD that talked about, you know, should you be in an in-house role and an influencer contract comes across your desk. So that was great timing and it was very helpful. And I certainly incorporated, you know, that lawyer's presentation into some of my review. And then coincidentally, in my sports law class, we were talking about athlete marketing. And so this conversation, this topic really carried me through the last couple of weeks. And I think that that's really nice. But I do think there really is an importance. CLEs do really play like an important role in developing and you know, just staying ahead of new legal trends.
And really big picture now, you know, you work with young lawyers and then you, I'm imagine you interact with many senior members of the bar. Gender balance is, you know, at the student level is quite good, but it doesn't remain that way as the more senior positions become available for lawyers. What do you think, where do you see the role of women in the law now, and where do you think things need to change to achieve gender equality more broadly?
That's a great question. And so this will be my personal view, not necessarily reflect like not reflective of Aviva or Western or anything. This is probably just my this is my personal view, but I agree with you. I think that there's a lot of women coming into the profession, and there is essentially gender parity at the law school level. But I do notice that there are still a lot of men still hold those top leadership roles in firms and in legal roles at companies. I think what needs to change to have more women stay in the profession is flexible. I think just having flexible billing, like flexible billing models, and also just flexible work hours. I think having that flexibility is crucial. And in my experience, COVID really helped me balance a lot of things because we were at home and you could, you know, you had a lot more time to yourself and to do other things. The other thing that I think I would like to see is the emphasis on mothers, lawyers who are also mothers, getting into decision-making roles, because I think those types of women are really important to have at the table because they bring a view. And I think the real issue is women who have children are forced to make a choice sometimes between, you know, whether they need to take a lesser role in their career or adjust their career in some way in order to accommodate, you know, this new element of their life. And so I think having more people who understand that and make adjustments within a firm, within a company, and just to the legal profession in general will go a long way to retaining those women, keeping them around, and then influencing policy moving forward.
Well, thank you, Amanda, for speaking with us today. These are really interesting issues, and we could talk for a lot longer, but we have limited time. So we also look forward to hearing from you at the Women in Law Conference about these topics as well.
Thanks very much, Tim. It was great chatting with you today.
Thank you for tuning in to CL Talk. You can listen to the latest episodes on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, and all major listening channels. Just search for CL Talk.